How many of you, when you were a child, you played the little game, he loves me, he loves me not, he loves me? Probably a fairly harmless game as a child, but if you go into adulthood playing that game, or you lived your life for the Lord playing that game, you are frustrated, you are unhappy, and let me just tell you what, you are exhausted. If Brother Jenkins said, hey, Steve called me this afternoon, I got some great news for you, Sally. He told me that he thinks he loves you. Not good news. I'm just going to tell you, that's not good news to me. Two little problems with that. He thinks. Recently, my oven has been a little less than dependable. And I know, you know, I've heard about Southern Cooks. I know you all probably have a lot of good ideas of how you can work around that. Don't take any ideas from me, because mine have been just pretty much the fails. Like, I had a nice lasagna I made Saturday night in my favorite lasagna pan. Sunday morning, preheat the oven, set it so it will shut off while we're at church. Oh no, it won't preheat. It's not turning on. So I thought, this is not a problem. I'm gonna dump this in my pressure cooker, which the girls nowadays think that they've come up with something new, pot, instant pots. Now, we know those are pressure cookers. You know, those are pressure cookers. They've been around a long time. Glad y'all think you got something new, but those not new. And so I thought, I'm going to put that in there, and the one that my daughter-in-law's bought me, I can set it to turn on so we come home. When we came home, we had this like a reddish color, tomato-y soup with big wide noodles, and, you know. I never at that time started wondering, oh, maybe Steve won't love me now. I'm wondering if he's going to still love me. Our biggest question was, you know, what do you want on your pizza? Because we're going down to the corner store and hitting up the pizza. I also tried my hand at Swiss steak in a crock pot. Oh, I was babysitting my son's dog, and he loved it. But he's the only one that had the teeth to handle that Swiss steak, you know. And once again, I was saying pepperoni and mushroom for me, because I'm not eating this. And so I never wonder if he loves me. And, you know, my husband's a foodie, but it wasn't ever an issue. Now, there's times I really frustrate him. And when he goes away and preaches, up in Turner, and maybe you're like that here, we don't lock our doors. And I know we should, and people have told us, you're going to be sorry, and I know they're right. We just don't. But I'm a little bit of the fearful. I'm a sort of a fearful person. Like, my husband wanted to build a garage to keep the snow off our cars for years. I never wanted to get a loan to buy a car or buy a garage, and I never wanted to. And my son Mike was dropping me off the house one time, and he was carrying my stuff in for me. He goes, oh, you got a bobcat out in your backyard. That's what that noise is. I was, sign me up for a loan. I'm ready for a loan. Where do I sign? Let's build that garage. I want to go into my garage, shut the door, walk through the house to get in. I'm a little bit fearful. So when Steve goes away, I lock the place down like it's Fort Knox. Every window, every door, we are locked tight. And then all I have to do when I come home from work is pull in the garage, shut it, go through the sunroom, into the house, I'm good. Well, because we built our garage later and we built the sunroom on later, they all have different locks, and they're just those little ones that twist. But it doesn't matter. When I'm there alone, they are all locked right up, all the way out. And so then I come home, and if I've forgotten to untwist, I'm locked out. And we do keep a key hidden in the garage, but I lock the garage up pretty tight, too. And so twice, I'm sorry to say, I've had to call one of my boys. I have three older boys, and they're men. They're not boys, I guess. They're in their 40s. They're boys. And I'll say, you know, I need you to come over and help me. We don't have AAA out, and fixes houses for sure, out in Turner. I need you to help me. We're going to have to break a window because I got everything locked up tight. And so we would choose a single pane, the cheapest window it looked like, and they'd break a window and get me in the house and roll their eyes and go home. And then Steve would come home, and I would, you know, tell him what happened. Well, he was getting ready to go to preach for Brother Rick Martin in the Philippines, and he started having this conversation about the stuff I needed to remember when he was gone. And in the conversation, he started picking out the best window. And I thought, you know, what do you think? That when the plane is wheels up, I'm calling my sons, going, get your steel-toe boots, boys, we're breaking some windows, you know? And I realized, this really irritates him. I mean, that's sort of a dumb moment. I know it. Now even saying it sounds silly. But so I got a locksmith out there, and we keyed them all the same, and cost about the same as a new window. And but even when he's frustrated with me, I didn't really set and worry that he didn't love me. Now, I can be that confident in the love of a man, and I'm talking about mankind, not picking on a gender. Why can't I be that confident about God's love? I can remember plenty of times in my life where, how many of you have locked your keys, lost your keys, and you start praying that the Lord will help you find your keys? Okay. Now, you don't have to raise your hands this time. How many of you ever started bartering with the Lord, like, Lord, I really need to find my keys. If you'll just help me, I'll do this and others. You know, I have done that plenty in my life. Now, if my children came to me and said, Mom, I really need your help. You could help me with this situation, and I really, really need your help. Now, if you'll help me, Mom, come Christmas, I'm going to help you clear the table off. I'm going to help you get the dishes put away. I would never sit and go, well, it depends on how much you're willing to put on the table if I'm going to help you out. No, I would actually start to wonder, what have I done to this child to make him so insecure about my love? And there'd probably be some things I could point to and find out. But when it comes to God, what more could he do than what he's already done? And yet we live insecure within the love of God. Now, I think you have to be willing to accept love and learn to accept love to give love. And that's sort of where we're going today. In the Bible, John, if we could all just get our heads around the fact God loves us like John did. Because John called himself the one he loved. And then he would name the disciples, this disciple and this disciple. That was, if I see you're looking for a reference. I think I put my references on this piece. John 15, 12, John 13, 35. There's several verses where he'll say, and the one Jesus loved. One time he lists all the other disciples, and then he said, and the one Jesus loved. Now, can't you imagine if you were Matthew, Mark, and Luke, John? You'd be sort of rolling your eyes and going, okay, buddy, got it. You're the favorite. I actually know Mrs. Jenkins' part of the country because I had grandparents that lived up there, and they lived up at Holton Lake. I'm going to need. Yeah. I'm taking this Benadryl for my allergies, and boy, it's making me so dry. And so I was the only granddaughter, and my granddad was embarrassingly favored me. I mean, it was, and I know you could never do this in today's world, but he had a big car hauler up in Michigan. He would pick up cars in Detroit and Flint and take them to Canada. And I lived right on the Canadian border growing up. And he would pull up in front of my elementary and junior high, and right at 3 o'clock when school's out, he'd lay on that horn on Fridays, and I'd come bailing out, and we'd get in the truck, and we'd take off for Canada singing absolutely stupid songs that we'd made up all night long. Then when I got tired, I'd go crawl in the back. He favored me over the grandchildren. And I didn't really mind. But he died, and My brother and I got in the car, and we were heading up to Houghton Lake, and we stopped in Flint, Michigan, to pick up my cousin Chuck. And Chuck starts talking about how Granddad, he loved hockey. And he says, it's probably because I played hockey, and y'all didn't. And, you know, I was his favorite. I thought, Chuck, you know, don't be delusional. You know, but I didn't say anything. And we stopped at a gas station, and Chuck went in to get some snacks, and we were all teenagers then. And my brother Doug looked at me, and he said, can you believe Chuck? And I says, I know, thinking that Doug surely knew I was his favorite. And Doug said, you know, it's probably because I was the oldest and first grandchild, but everybody knew I was his favorite. So now we got, now I'm riding with two delusional men, because I know for sure he was able to have enough love in his heart that he made us all feel like we were his very favorite. We serve a God who's synonymous with love. God is love. Love is God. I think he not only can make us feel like his favorite, I think you are his favorite. I mean, think about it. It's almost, if we think about it, I mean, if you think about a God that watches us, anybody else watching me while I'm asleep is a little creepy. But if you think about a God who just watches you while you're sleeping, if you think about a God, when God wanted to illustrate to you just what he thinks of you and how much he thinks of you, he said he's numbered the hairs on your head. And as they were growing back, Miss Wendy, he started numbering them all back again. Amazing. That's how much God thinks about you. You're his favorite. What if we all had the confidence? Let's even try it, since it's just us here in this room. Just look at the person next to you and say, my name, you know, it would be nothing for me to say, my name is Sally, I am Rachel's mother. Look at somebody next to you and say, my name is Sally, or don't say Sally. My name is, I'm the one he loves. Okay. So in the Bible, we read about Zacchaeus, and Zacchaeus, we call him Zacchaeus, and strangely enough, Jesus called him Zacchaeus, but the people in town called him tax collector. Tax collector to them, and sometimes to us, but to them truly meant crook. And then they called him chief crook. He was the chief taxman. But the name Zacchaeus means pure one. And when God went to Zacchaeus and he looked, you know, we always talk about how he was a little man, you know, he was a wee little man. This something much bigger here. God looks at that wicked old Zacchaeus and he calls him not tax collector. He calls him Zacchaeus. He calls him pure one. And you say, well, I don't know how God could, or how Jesus could have given. And I'm sure the disciples said, you're going to his house, you better watch your wallet, he's a crook. You know, I'm sure everybody was a little surprised that Jesus was going to Zacchaeus' house. There's only one reason. And we find that reason in, I don't have my iPad. I'm just going to quote it to you. We find that reason is, it's not that we love God, it's that he loves us. And you may say, you don't know what I've done. You don't know what my past, I don't have to know what your past is to know that you're his favorite. Because it's not that you love God, it's that he loves us. And we just have a God that is just unlimited love. So why is it that we have such a difficult time receiving and accepting that love? And I need my two helpers to come up. Someone thought we were going to count these, which was a good guess. So, yeah. come right over to you to this side. Okay, so as a child, children, what do? They reach out for love, right? And that's where we learn love. That's where we learn how to feel love and how to feel secure. So you reach out for love, and you say, Mommy, will you, you know, come lay down on the bed with me? Slap my hand. He says, no, just go to bed and go to sleep. Mommy, can we go do this together? Now, I'm busy right now. I got dishes to do. I got dinner to make. I've got all these things to do. You need to just go find something to do. After a person reaches out to whether it's a parent, a friend, someone in the church, their husband, enough, and gets... You go like this. And this is how you go through life. Because this is self-preservation with your hands right tight. So along comes God who wants to, I don't have two hands. Actually, I'm going to get two hands. I need an extra hand. So along comes God who wants to give us love from an unlimited source, but our hands are tight. Maybe along comes a church lady who wants to help you and wants to help love you, but you're like this. Why? You've been hurt. You've been rejected. For you, love has equaled pain and rejection. So you got your hands clasped right up tight. Then comes along someone who needs love from you. Maybe it's a child, maybe it's a friend. Put your hands out, you want some love from me? This is where I'm at. Now we can criticize this woman here and we can say, boy, she is cold. That woman's never told her children she's loved her. That we can say whatever we want about this person, but you can't give something you don't have. Okay, thank you. All right, thanks. Yeah, thank you. That's why learning to feel loved by God is so important. Because you have got to break that cycle. There's some women in this room, and maybe your parents never told you they loved you. There's some women in this room that... You loved a man, and he rejected your love and left. And love was pain. Or maybe you had friends that just didn't accept you. You didn't look like them. You're never going to look like them. You're never going to fit into them. And when you reached out for love, and your hands are like this. And then there's going to be people who desperately need love from you. And you just don't have it to give. You can't give something you don't have. Which is so sad in our circle because we have a God who has an unlimited supply of love that he can pour into our hearts and into our minds and into our beings. It's not that we love God. You say, I just don't understand. I don't understand how God could ever love me. It's not the point. It's that he loved us. It's that he loved us. I'm going to venture over just a little bit into something. I think you have to really be careful if you're a mom and your nature is to be that of a perfectionist. And you can make excuses for it and say, well, I want my child to be the best they can be. What you're teaching them is they never will measure up. Be really careful about that. If you know it's your nature to do things really well, not everyone around you is going to do it that way. And it's going to come across as, she doesn't accept me, she doesn't love me. Another really important measure of this is, if you have a daughter and they're constantly rejected And then all of a sudden, some boy comes along and gives them a little bit of love. You know what they're going to do? They're going to hold on to that with everything they have. You ladies want your daughter's hands to be so full of love from you, from your mother-in-law. I don't get along with my, I do get along with my mother-in-law, but if you don't get along with your mother-in-law, do it for your daughter's sake, because you want her to have her hands full of love from you, her Sunday school teacher, your grandparents, everybody that can, so that when some boy comes along and he wants to put a little bit of love in her life, it's just one more person, because she feels loved. She's not going to grab on to the first boy that's not worth her and hold on with both hands and start fighting everybody that comes along, because that's the first little bit of love that she has felt. So I don't know where you are today on this. Maybe you're the church ladies, and a church lady here, and you feel very secure in God's love. And it's easy to get frustrated with someone who constantly rejects your love to them. Maybe it's a daughter-in-law, maybe it's another lady at church, maybe it's a child. What do you have to lose? Because if you give them every bit that you have, you've got an unlimited supply coming your way to keep pulling from. You have nothing to lose. If you're the lady that feels like this, this relates to you, I'm going to ask you in a little bit to just take a finger and just pry it open just a little bit. Just a little bit. The doors are shut. It's just us. This is a safe place for you. I'm going to ask you to just pry those hands open just a little bit. I actually grew up in a pretty secure situation. But 25, maybe 30 years ago, our church went through a really rough time. And it just got bad. Let's just leave it at that. It just got pretty rough. And I started doing all kinds of crazy things. Like I would go, we only have this one little grocery store in town. I would go and I'd drive up and down the aisles to make sure there was nobody's car there I knew. Or if you got inside and you heard a voice you knew, you stayed in the other aisles. I would come in just when church was going to start and then grab my four little chickens and head out the door the minute it was over. And we had a relative that was going to give a testimony at a camp in Mississippi. I'd never been to a camp. I'm a northern girl, never been to a camp meeting in Mississippi. Didn't know what I was getting myself into. And we went down there to hear him give his testimony. And they, up in Maine, and probably at your church, they have handshaking. Now, you all are huggers here, so you're going to really, you'll understand this probably more than I did. We have handshaking. And I am sorry to say that many of the people at our church, you know how at church you all have your assigned seats, right? Yeah. We do too. And there's a lot of people in our church, and I'm not trying to make Maine people seem cold, but they'll have their hand sanitizer then in where the songbook goes, and they'll have handshaking, and they go back and they put hand sanitizer on. And then one of the men of the church hooked up hand sanitizers at the entrance doors for the people shaking hands as they come in. And I'm thinking, that's sort of cold. that's like, oh, I do. And so, but we went down to Mississippi. They're not like that. And it's been years, and I see her face. I would love to see her in heaven someday. I have no idea how our paths could ever cross again, but I want to see her again so bad. And there was a lady at that meeting, and I was probably in my late 30s or 40s then, and so she was older than I was, and she was just impeccably dressed, a beautiful black lady, and she came up to me, and She didn't want to shake hands. She wanted to hug. And when she hugged me for sort of an awkwardly long time. And then she whispered in my ear, she says, "I love you, honey." And I went immediately into the ugly cry. And headed right out to the bathroom in the ugly cry. And I sat in the bathroom all by myself in that little camp meeting and thought, I got a real problem. I got a real problem. How can I ever help my children and my friends get through the troubles we were having at church if I don't feel loved? I have nothing to give if I can't feel loved. I don't have any love to give. And she really did so much to break that down for me. And I'm here to tell you, you don't know who's sitting around you feeling absolutely alone in a crowd. And if you happen to hit the wrong person with love, you got an endless supply. It doesn't matter. The Bible talks about, you know, the elderly, or the, it doesn't, it's not elderly, what is it? Not older, aged women teaching the younger, and really learn this. And, you know, I actually had an opportunity to really talk to our church ladies about it. Sweetest little pastor's wife up north in Maine, cutest little girl. She had many children, one right after a row. One, boom, boom, boom. And went into a really bad, postpartum depression. Now, Maine women are pretty hardy women. My daughter taught school down here in North Carolina for a little while. I know you all look really like, you know, up in Maine, sometimes they can even look a little hardy. But up here, now, you all look much more feminine, but I learned pretty quickly at her church that you all are pretty strong women, too. You women down here, you've got it, and you know you've got it. And so it's easy when you see somebody like that to say, she needs to just, and I'm sorry, I've been guilty of this. I'm going, I wish I knew when my kids were little I could have a postpartum depression. Nobody told me. I would have loved to have one myself, you know. But I wasn't given, you know, oh, I could just, oh, I hate that I said that, but I did say that. This little woman took her baby out to Express the Highway, Main Turnpike, and stepped in front of a Mack truck. After that happened, I got pretty serious about this, and I started telling our church ladies, forget the baby. The baby's cute. We all know the baby's cute. Don't look at the baby anymore. When these new moms come in the church, you get them in the eyes, and you make sure they're okay. It's up to us as the aged women of the church to get a look into their eyes and make sure those girls are okay. Because who else is going to? You know, don't look at the baby. Okay, baby's cute. You need to look at mom and make sure mom's doing okay. You just never know who it is sitting next to you that needs some love. So I'm going to ask you to do something. And for many of you, this is a hug in church, so for many of you, this is going to be easy, easy. But there's a few of you, this is going to be tough. Because you did not grow up with someone showering you with love. And you just never learned. What you've learned is when you reach out for love, you could get hurt. And I'm going to ask you in the safety of this room to just open your hands just a little bit. And I want to just take a few minutes, and I want you to go to ladies of your own church and let them know that you love them. And then I want you to go to some ladies that you've never met before. We get love from a God that's endless. I think we've got plenty of love to love someone you've never met before. And I think just like that woman in my life, God could use you in somebody else's life to break down that barrier and open that hand. We've got to break the cycle. We've got, and it's going to, if mom, it's going to have to be you that breaks the cycle. You are the one. You can't do anything about what happened in your past. You can't do anything about the fact that maybe you didn't feel love from your parents. But you can't pass that on to your daughters. You've got to somehow find a way to be vulnerable enough to open your hands and break the cycle.